Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Fall is on the way. A little June gloom in the fall. It's getting cooler. Your bodies are changing. Perhaps your digestion is starting to change. Food is seasonal. And if you don't have the right food for the right season, you start to develop digestive disorders. Digestive disorders, the first three rows in every drugstore across the United States. Heartburn, acid reflux, GERD, hiatal hernias, esophageal spasms. And just your overall digestion as something that's fundamental to your health. What does that really mean? Well, today's show has something in it for everybody. So if your digestion's good, I want you to understand by the end of this show what the advantage is. And if your digestion's reeking with heartburn, reflux, GERD, hiatal hernias, esophageal spasms, if your solar plexus aches and burns, that's that area just below your sternum that gets soft, where it's sensitive and where most people experience their heartburn, no matter what, who, or why. I want you to listen today. I'm going to do a nice compilation over the next 60 minutes of causes and then, of course, how to eliminate. But you've got to have the education, so here we go. As always, get to the website. I've got great pictures. You can learn so much more. If not, use your imagination. Here we go. First of all, from your mouth to your anus, the connection most people aren't thinking in terms of, but from your mouth down to the anus is a tube. That's your digestive tube. When you cut open a fish, when you cut open an animal, you take out the digestive tube because you don't want to eat the contents of the digestive tube. It is a tube, mouth to anus. That tube has a job to do, and the amount of work you give it. So here's the first concept. The amount of work that you give that tube to take the food you put in it and turn it into cellular energy, the amount of work you give that tube determines the amount of extra energy you have to do other things. If you stress your digestive tube, you take as much as half the energy you would have had for the entire day. So you got to understand, your symptoms and concerns about digestion aside, all of that aside, all of us have to look at the amount of energy we make per day and how much of that energy are you utilizing to digest and assimilate your food. Now, that's a very variable number. And that number can be so variable that even without symptom in the digestive tube, you can get yourself sick. The first step towards fixing disease is fixing digestion. Oh, well, your digestion's not problematic. You see, that's where I'm going to kind of slant you today. If your digestion is not symptomatic, it doesn't mean it's not problematic. In other words, how much energy do you use to digest your food? Does that food drop into the gut and disappear within 10 or 15 minutes? Is digestion a breeze? It's like a woman's period, a woman's monthly cycle. How much energy does she give to that monthly cycle? You don't have to be symptomatic, ladies, but you know when you're on your period. When you're in your menstrual cycle, you know it. You may get by without symptom, but you know it. Suppose you don't know it. Suppose your menstrual cycle is just so absolutely smooth that it barely costs you a penny's worth of energy. That's what I mean about digestion. When digestion is optimal, you don't know you're digesting. There's no concept of it. There's hunger, there's satiety, and that's it. Now, how many of us can speak that way? And that's the point. Now, from there, we go downhill. All the way to everything you eat creates heartburn, reflux, upchuck, GERD, spasms in the esophagus. I'm doing the show today because so many people still come into this office with these types of issues. They live with them. They live with them to the point where they can't even get off their proton pump inhibitors. They can't get off of their antacids. They live with a constant burning pain in the solar plexus area that gets worse or better, but it's always there. All of it absolutely unnecessary. We really could, if we got more educated, just clean out the first three rows of every drugstore in the United States, every Stride Rite, every CVS. It's all to help your digestion. So let's get into it. Let's understand it. First concept, it's a tube. Now, that tube is the tube you put food into. And first little pearl, chew your food. Assuming you chew your food till it's, you know, everybody hears that. You've heard it all. Somewhere along the line, somebody's reminded you to chew your food, but how many people do? How many people are on antacids that just slob their food down at high speed at lunch with the coworkers or at dinner with the family? First one is chew your food. That is if you have teeth. If you don't have teeth and you've got solid food, worse yet. So if you're chewing your food into a pulp and it goes into your stomach and then into the beginning of your small intestine, the duodenum, just past the stomach, that food is marinated. So we're going to do a little physiological review. That food that you just dropped into the gut is being inundated by three fluids. One is hydrochloric acid from the stomach. The other is bile from the gallbladder. And the third are pancreatic enzyme. Now, you've got to ensure yourself that you're getting enough of that. Are you making your HCl? Do you have enough pancreatic enzyme? And do you have enough bile? And if you're of the opinion that really this isn't important because you can counter everything with your digestive enzymes and your HCl, forget it. That is a myopic statement. Those things help. They do not create good digestion from adequate digestion. They don't create great digestion from poor digestion. They help. If you've listened to this show for the last 5 years, then you agree, as is your experience, that digestive enzymes can help you. By no means does it mitigate or eliminate the extreme critical importance of understanding that you have to produce your own HCl and lots of it, and you've got to produce your own pancreatic enzyme and lots of it, and you've got to produce your own bile and then get that bile to flow. Now, those three fluids are very variable in their production, thus the need for you to understand. First of all, the hydrochloric acid, if you're not a salt eater, if you don't eat reasonable amounts of sea salt, you may find yourself a little bit shy. But next to this one, the one I'm about to mention, salt or no salt, barely important. The parietal cells of the stomach are under control of the vagus nerve. That's your parasympathetic autonomic supply. That means you got stress, you don't make HCl. That means you're the high anxiety type, you don't make HCl. And for those of you who are on the antacids, the proton pump inhibitors, so on and so forth, the side effects of these things denying you your HCl are catastrophic. So we're not going to address that. We're going to assume you understand that your pharmaceutical drugs, thinking that your heart burns your HCl and that you've got to produce less of it, we're not going to even address that today. Most of you listening to the show know better. But what you may overlook is that a lot of the reason the food rots in your stomach, especially the proteins, the animal proteins especially, is not only because it's overcooked, but because your high anxiety, sympathetic, stress-dominant lifestyle do not allow you to produce any hydrochloric acid, or much less than you should. That's a big one. A bloods, especially A bloods. A bloods are the internalizers. A bloods are the mediators. A bloods the diplomats. A bloods take care of everyone else at their own expense. A bloods off higher levels of anxiety than most of your other blood types. Yes, you listening out there, some of you are saying, yes, that's me. Very classic A blood. A blood, B blood, O blood, AB blood. A bloods classically present as internalizers. They're higher anxiety types that don't produce as much hydrochloric acid. So if you're an A blood, I'm probably talking to you. That's why A bloods tend to need small meals, multiple small meals. They can't handle the big hit because they can't come up with the digestive juice. Very important. So that HCl, and that HCl has functions. HCl is your disinfectant. HCl sets up the pHs for the entire digestive tube. So if you're not getting adequate amounts of HCl, worse yet, denying yourself because somebody made the mistake of telling you that you should and that's the cause of your heartburn, as if it is, but it's not. The function is an anti-infective to disinfect, to set the pHs by itself, amidst a whole bunch of other things HCl is for, is disastrous for your health. So you think of that food you just dropped into your gut on a pendulum of HCl. Pottinger and Price did those studies years ago where you see animals, well, forget the study, animals in general can eat rotten meat. Animals in nature are always eating rotten meat, a kill that's 3 days old that somebody discarded gets eaten by an animal. That animal lives off that. It shows no sign of disease, no sign of ill health. Just swallows it, chews it, and goes about its way. Stays strong on it. Well, we know why. The amount of hydrochloric acid that the maggots and the bacteria are subjected to are enough to neutralize and sterilize it. And that Price Pottinger Institute years ago did studies. They would watch cats, healthy cats, eat rancid meat and then pull their gastric contents out. And 15 minutes later, all the meat was disinfected. That's a big one. Is your HCl production produced with that type of power? Or is your stress, your anxiety, your autonomic imbalance to the point where you're much in need? Then, of course, there's bile. Bile to emulsify fat, but you need a fat and a protein to hold hands, to work with each other, to assimilate. So when you don't have the gallbladder working, you really don't have not just your fat, but your protein assimilation not in order. And, of course, all the shows done won't even get into that, not really the scope of the show today. What to do to make that bile flow. So we're talking heartburn. We're talking hiatal hernia. We're talking esophageal reflux. We're talking GERD, talking acid reflux. As far as I'm concerned, just different ways of spinning out the same problem. Understanding the ins and outs of HCl production, number one. Number two, understanding that the bile must flow. Again, if in fact, instead of lodging copious amounts of bile, you've constricted the bile ducts due to sympathetic dominance, anxiety, so on and so forth, you won't get bile flow. And even if you do, are the biliary ducts congested? Now, all the things we suggest, from the olive oil flushes to the coffee enemas, so on and so forth, to make sure that the bile flows after the age of 50, absolutely critical. It should be standard fare that everyone in America after the age of 50 and between 50 to 55 gets in about 25, 30 big oil flushes. Yeah, it really works that way. If you've had 5 years of the American diet, by the time you're 50, those tubules, those bile canaliculi, are seriously congested. You've got to factor that in. Bile flow to emulsify fat to ensure protein and fat digestion. How many of the geriatric community are wasting away in wheelchairs because they've lost all their musculature because they can't digest their food? And again, no. The digestive enzymes help. They do not fix the problem. The problem is fundamental. You produce the bile, it just doesn't get out. Bile, HCL, and last but not least, your pancreatic enzymes. You know, in some medicines, the strength of the pancreas is the strength of the organism. With lots of people, just the strength of the pancreatic output correlates proportionately to the genetic strength of the organism. In Ayurvedic medicine, the Agni, A-G-N-I, the power of the pancreas to supply copious amounts of pancreatic enzyme, lipase, protease, amylase, to dissolve what's left of the food after the biliary system and the HCL have more or less emulsified it. Again, that pancreatic output can be very, very variable. Now, when you drop the food down after you chew it, that food has to be meshed with those three fluids. If you're having reflux, acid reflux, GERD, so on and so forth, one thing you've got to check, and I'm just setting you up, the show's about the structural issues behind these problems. But before we go to the structural issues, because statistically that's where you've got much bigger problems. But before you go to the structural issues, you want to eliminate these chemical issues. So on your checklist, if you suffer from the heartburn, the GERD, reflux, whatever you want to call it, esophageal spasms, gallbladder attacks, pancreatic insufficiencies, you have to tend to the flow of those three organs. As I described, as I've put on the 275 shows. All right. Now, let's get this one straight. After that food breaks down, to the extent that it breaks down, it's got to be sucked up by the intestinal villi. That means the villi, the trillions of them, in the 35 feet of small intestine have work to do. Take a look at picture number two and look at a large magnification. This is about, I guess that's about 20,000 times. Look at the magnification of the inside of the small intestine. Look at those fingers, those villuses. Plural are villi. Now look at those. Each one of those has a job to do. Picture number three. You've got absorptive cells called enterocytes. You've got mucus cells called goblet cells to make sure that things don't get too irritated. Those enterocytes have a job to do. And so if you don't deliver a fully emulsified, fully digested, complete with enough HCL, enough pancreatic enzyme, enough bile, if you don't turn your food to liquid, those cells have far too much work to do. If you give an absorptive cell of the villus, of the villi, too much work to do, consistently over time, the intestines will inflame. And that's how you open yourself up to things like leaky gut. So stage one is, did you chew it? Stage two is, did you bury it in digestive fluids? Stage three is, did you absorb it? And did you give your intestine, your individual villi, too much work to do? Or was it just a smooth move? If you gave your villi too much work to do, it's going to inflame. And then the digested food is going to go between those enterocytes. Larger compounds, not the ones that are fully broken down, are going to escape digestion and enter the bloodstream partly digested. And of course, your immune system, your police force, is sitting there waiting to blow the whistle the minute they see something there that shouldn't be there. And this, of course, is the basis to your autoimmune diseases. So much when Jensen, when all the founding fathers of American nutrition were quick to say digestion or disease begins in the gut, this is what they meant. The first line of defense to disease begins in the gut, and this is what they meant. So, what are we looking at here? We're not looking at a symptom. We're not looking at, how do I fix my acid reflux? How do I fix my GERD? How do I fix my esophageal spasms? What we're looking at here is, how do we profile the efficiency of our digestive process? How do we look at all the indices, chemical and structural, of the digestive process to bring them to a more energy efficient level? That's a very, very different mindset than looking to fix your heartburn. You have to get that one. I'm doing the show because I see so many people with these problems that have gone on for years. And I'm just setting you up for the big part of the show, because the structural problems behind heartburn and spasms and the rest of it are much bigger. The psychostructural issues of digestion are far more prevalent than the chemical ones. But I want you to start to understand it from the standpoint of profile. This is what people do not do with their diseases. This is what people do. They focus on their symptoms. What can I take from my symptom? Tell me what the cause of my heartburn is, and then tell me what to do instead of, my digestion is obviously defunct because I don't digest with ease. I digest with pain. And I want to change my digestive process. That's not the way you think. It's the way you have to think. Otherwise, you spin around in circles for many years. Many people spin for many years. We have to do better than that. Too many people spin around in circles for too many years with their problems. So, those villuses have enterocytes. And if you have enough HCL, if you have enough pancreatic enzyme, if you have enough bile, if you've chewed your food, and last but not least, what? What have I left out? What are you actually eating? Is it a well-done burnt steak or carpaccio? Is it a tuna steak grilled to perfection, well done and gray? Barbecued to a piece of rubber, that tuna steak? Is that salmon on the grill cooked through and through and through? God forbid you should risk a parasite or some bacterial infection because you didn't microwave your food. And are you dropping these overcooked animal proteins into your stomach at night when you don't even have the hormonal reserve to digest all the stress you put into your stomach? Well, that's the only meal you can relax, because breakfast, you're rushing out of the house, and lunch, of course, is at work, and you might not take one, or if you take one, there's somebody sitting there with a shotgun to make sure you don't come back to the office a little bit too late. So, of course, the meal that you sit down to relax is at dinner. It's your biggest meal, and then you overcook your food. And what does that say? It says you have to use more of those juices. And at the point where you can't get enough of those juices to eat that overcooked food under that stressful environment, you see why the first three rows of every drugstore in the United States are digestive aids. So last, but certainly not least, is what are you eating? Now, the paleo diet has swept the nation. There's a reason for that, and I won't get into that today. But as far as your animal proteins are concerned, don't overcook them. If you can't do sashimi or high-quality sushi, at least poach or steam. Your chicken, instead of grilling it, at least boil it. And your meats, please eat high-quality grass-fed meats, organic, and get them on the rare side. But if you expect to get on the other side of digestive disorder, don't be having your animal proteins cooked, well cooked. It doesn't work. Or eat something else then. So, won't get into food today. Not really the scope of the show. But you're profiling yourself. You're sitting there. You're listening to the show. Some of you will listen to the archives this week. I have about 3,000 people a week listening to this show from all over the world at different times. That's what the analytics says. And that's fantastic. So I have about 3,000 people then just listening and educating themselves from every part of the planet, going to the higher level. And the higher level for you today is: look at the food, look at the bile, look at the HCL, look at the pancreatic enzyme. Chew your food. There, you've got part of it already. Understand, if you don't have digestive issues, it's not about digestive issues, it's about digestive efficiency. Does the food drop in and disappear? Because if it does, you have efficiency. And then there's less efficiency and less efficiency. And finally, it's so inefficient that you're getting pain. So there's a huge arc there. And of course, all of those villi and all of those tubes of digestion are what? Under the influence of the enteric nervous system. So picture number five, the brain in your gut. The gut's brain, known as the enteric nervous system, is located in sheaths of tissue lining the esophagus, stomach, small intestine, and colon. That means if you are a high anxiety type, if you fail to understand what it is to truly relax your body, if this is foreign to you, if your body is just something you use like a coin machine or a car, you just put the gas in and it goes, and you have no further understanding of that, you may be in a position then where your gut doesn't know how to relax anymore. And once it doesn't relax, those fluids don't come out right, and the gut twists. To anxiety, the tube, we call the digestive tube, twists. Once you twist these structures, nothing's getting digested. See, oh, I don't know what it is. I just don't know what it is. I can't digest my food anymore. Everything I eat creates bloating. Everything I eat creates gas. Everything I eat creates heartburn. Everything I eat wants to come back up again. I take my digestive enzymes. I cover all my bases. No one can figure this out. I've been to my doctor, and they say I have GERD. What your doctor didn't tell you, what your nutritionist may not have told you, is that your anxiety has turned the bile duct, has turned the esophagus, has turned the pancreatic duct into a snowball of tension, and you've twisted that intersection of digestive tissue in the solar plexus. You've twisted it into a knot. That is why you feel a knot there. And the chakra, the celiac ganglion, the little intersection of nerves that the vagus nerve distributes through to all of these organs, is irritated and physically twisted in proportion to the amount of anxiety you live with. Do you hold your anxiety in your gut? When you get upset, do you feel it in your gut? Have you given yourself an ulcer before or a near ulcer before? Do you hold your emotion in and burn in the solar plexus? Then you wouldn't wonder then why you suffer from esophageal spasms or GERD or reflux or heartburn or any of it. You understand? The anxiety will physically twist those tissues. Very important to understand. So when you have these issues, these digestive issues, one thing off the bat is at some point you have to make a distinction, or someone has to make a distinction, between a structural issue, meaning anxiety has twisted physical structures, thus your complaint, or it's a chemical issue, not enough HCL, the food's not right, you're not chewing your food, the biliary system's congested. If your biliary system's congested, your pancreatic ducts will congest also, because they join together. So this distinction has to be made. Let's take a little peek. Let's remember this. Let's remember picture number 7. Go to picture number 7. If you're new to the show, get on the website straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with 2 T's. And if you're looking at picture number 7, that bile duct and that pancreatic duct, you can see it. They meet inside the small intestine. That's important to understand, because one gets clogged, the other will be clogged. If it's sludgy down at the end of the sphincter, it'll back up, or it will depress the amount of pancreatic enzyme that you secrete as well as the amount of bile. If it twists a little bit, you will depress secretion. If what it's trying to digest is too difficult to digest, that space will have food that will sit and rot, and then your bacteria will digest it instead of your digestive juices, and that creates all sorts of unnecessary byproducts. Now go to picture number 9. Wonderful picture. And let's start the structural concern. Many of you suffer from these problems because of structural issues. You have to understand what that means. No, I don't want to understand what it means. I just want to know what to do about it. I got it. Don't be the person that talks like that, please. This is a very common thing in techno society. I understand it. The Cliff Note version is what people think works, and it leaves them short every time. You have to really understand it. You have to get it three-dimensionally in your being. Not just, yeah, I got it, now tell me what to do. People that think that way, they don't heal. Take the time to understand that the esophagus goes through the diaphragm. That's what that picture's showing you. Where you see lower esophageal sphincter, it goes through the diaphragm. For different reasons, when that stomach gets pushed up too high under the diaphragm, everything in your stomach is going to start burning your esophagus. So just understand the way the digestive tube is structured is such that as that esophagus passes through the hole in the diaphragm, this is, you're looking at picture number 9. As the esophagus passes through the hole in the diaphragm, if for whatever reason that passage is reversed, meaning the stomach starts pushing up towards the hole in the diaphragm, you're going to upchuck the contents of your stomach into your lower esophagus, acid reflux, GERD. Now, what would cause that? Lots would cause that. Lots of people have a structural problem, and they're being told they have a digestive problem. Well, they do, but they don't, because they think a digestive problem means they're not digesting their food because there's some problem in the digestive, in the different aspects of digestion. And that's not the case with many people. With many people, there are physical reasons that that stomach is being pushed up towards the diaphragm and you're upchucking your food. Just on your own time, if you're listening on the radio and my knowledgeable tone has caught your attention, simply get to straighttalk.cc, not .com, and get some real answers instead of spinning around in circles, as many, many, many Americans are. Get to my website, straighttalk.cc. I've got some 275 shows with pictures very often, elaborating, illuminating, and giving you a real perspective on how to cure yourself. That's picture 9. Study that picture, and let's get to causes, but a little more anatomy first. Look at picture 15. Actually, let's look at picture 16. Actually, let's look at picture 18. Now there. Picture 18. See if without upsetting yourself, you can blow that picture up. That's a great picture of the diaphragm and a hole in the diaphragm with the esophagus coming through the hole in the diaphragm. Take a look at that if you can. Picture 18, that's the esophagus coming hole in the diaphragm. That hole in the diaphragm can have a lot more choke-like tension on that esophagus, and that stomach can get pushed up much closer to that hole. In which case, you're going to have a reflux. You're going to have irritation. It's a great picture, picture 18. Picture 18, you can also look at picture 17. Look at picture 17 and look at that red aorta, the aorta coursing through the diaphragm. And just an inch above it is the esophagus coming through the diaphragm. That's picture 17. Just above that red is the esophagus. It looks like a rubber hose coming through the hole in the diaphragm. Now, that white in the center of the diaphragm is the central tendon of the diaphragm. And that central tendon of the diaphragm is part of what's tied to the spinal cord, but to the vertebra by the crura of the diaphragm. So let's see if we can get you a much better picture of the crura of the diaphragm. Go to picture 16. If you go to picture 16, you can see easily the tube, the diaphragm, the tube, the esophagus coming through the white hole in the diaphragm. Around that tube are two straps. They look like rope that ties the diaphragm to the vertebra. So picture 16. Look at that tube coming through the diaphragm, through the white of it. That's the esophagus. And note that that tube around it are two straps that are tied in to the white of the vertebra. Between those two straps called the crura, that's the crus of the diaphragm, and between that white central tendon of the diaphragm, you can easily choke your esophagus, which means the tension in the diaphragm controls digestion. It has a large influence on digestion. So We were talking about chemical causes. Now we're into structural causes of digestion. If you're the guy that never takes a deep breath, if you are rigid in the diaphragm, and again, get to my shows on straighttalk.cc, past shows a couple of weeks ago, The Power of the Breath. What is a diaphragmatic breath? Breath properly done. A mature, sophisticated breath relaxes the central tendon. Most people hold enormous tension in the central tendon of the diaphragm. So right from Jump Street, you are set up to choke that lower end of the esophagus before it becomes the stomach. See, this is why the it theory is so poor. This is why you cannot go about your health looking for it. Human biological organisms, especially ours, are complex, multifaceted systems. And what we do, because we have put healthcare in such a tizzy, is we give the public, and you are the public, this idea that there's an it. Because it's simple, because it's easy, because you got to do other things. And it doesn't work that way. And I am telling you, at this phase of the game, it is far too late for us to do this. You cannot look for it anymore. So I say you have to put health on the A list. Not the C list, the A list. You got to know as much about your health as you do about your retirement. You know, you look across the board on AM radio, these AM weekend shows, and they're all retirement and what to do with your money and money matters and where to put your dough and what to do in your retirement and how to vacation. It's all these things that you want to do. Understandably, of course, that are very important to you. Understandably, of course. But the bottom line is, after 60, most people don't have enough money. There are lots of people that, well, let's put it this way. 50 years ago, we had a different country with a different level of health. We're at the point now where there are too many people getting sick too young. I don't see it getting a lot better. I do see solutions, but it means you have to really put it on the A list now. And understand we have to move from this it theory, like what's the cause of it, your heartburn. I'll tell you what it is. No, you have to understand your digestive profile and see how you profile out. And then in some intelligent way, you've got to pick away at the causes. 20% emotional, 20% your food choices, 20% you don't get the juices down there, and 40% structural, which I'll delineate now a little more. But you get my point. So you got to have that picture, 16 and 17, 15, 16, 17. Those are pictures of the diaphragm, different angles on it, and you have to understand your esophagus to your stomach is coursing through the central tendon of that diaphragm. Now, here's what's fascinating. Catch this. It's fascinating. On picture 16, I want you to see or notice a picture 16 that the diaphragm and the psoas muscles intersect at about the same place. So let's make that easier for you. Look at picture number 20. Look at picture number 20. Take a good look at picture 20. Take your time with that. That's the psoas muscle. Now, where is that muscle? That muscle is pictured. That muscle is pictured. The muscle on 20 is pictured in picture 16. That big long muscle on picture 16 that comes down and inserts into the thigh. That muscle inserting into the thigh bone, the femur, on either side on picture 16 is the same muscle I just showed you on picture 20. Now, here's what's fascinating. Notice if you go to the top of that muscle, it intersects in the same place that the esophagus does, and it intersects in the same place that the crura of the diaphragm do. The high end of the psoas muscle is fairly proximal. It's fairly close to the crus of the diaphragm. It's even fairly close, not completely, but fairly close to where the esophagus comes through the central tendon of the diaphragm. You can see all of that in picture 16. Picture 16 is a famous picture. Picture 16 is a famous picture. When you put your fingers, men, ladies, on your chest, and you course down until you come off the bone to the solar plexus where it's sensitive, where you feel your ulcer, where you feel your anxiety, where you feel your gallbladder problems, where you feel your digestive issues. If you press deep enough in there, you're looking at picture 16 up on the top. It's the same area. And it's important for you to understand there's about 50 things going on there. In that same area, you call the solar plexus. You've got the bile duct coming down, the pancreatic duct coming down, the esophagus going through the diaphragm. You've got the crura of the diaphragm. You've got the origins of the psoas. You have the nerve plexuses. And guess what? Here's the topper. Flip on up on the website. Go to the top of the website, fascia magnified 25 times. Just turn this viewer on, and we'll get back to the point. Turn on that YouTube I got way up on the top. Give yourself a little treat there. We're not going to get into this. Some of you have seen this video before. Do you see all that grimy white stuff? Sure you do. That's the fascia. Well, on your own, go through that YouTube video. Very, very informative. But that gristle, that fascial gristle, go down to picture 27. Go down to picture 27. Just take a peek. No big deal. Look at all that gristle. All that white, fibrous, spiderwebby kind of stuff. That is wrapped around that area. That is wrapped around that solar plexus area. Everything I mentioned, it's all wrapped up in that fascia. Do you realize what a structural mess you might be? With enough anxiety, enough tension, enough without flexibility, with enough twisting of the spine that hasn't been addressed, that area around the solar plexus will take all those structures that I've delineated over the last 30 minutes and twist them into a pretzel. And people sit there for year upon year upon year upon year. And you cannot see this disorientation. You will not get this explained to you in endoscopy. Forget endoscopy for this. You will not see it on a scan. You will not see it on an ultrasound. It is far too subtle. And these structural misappropriations are not even respected in allopathic medicine. So even if they were gross, they wouldn't be noted. Rarely will they be noted. But this is what causes the problem for many, many people. And this is why we're not getting anywhere with the issue. We're not respecting structural issues. So the fascia can twist this intersection that should be free to digest and free to flow and free to do the things it's supposed to do. And one of the primary reasons it twists is because the psoas muscle, which I just mentioned, so again, page 6, picture 16, picture 17, when that psoas muscle comes forward as it shortens, it stuffs your stomach up on the other side of the diaphragm. As the psoas goes anterior, it will push the stomach in to the diaphragm. Now, if you take a look at picture 21, we're talking about the anterior displacement of the psoas muscle. I've mentioned this at least 1,000 times in 5 years. The anterior displacement of the psoas muscle and how that is going. I showed you picture 16, picture 17. That psoas, as it moves anterior, you're seeing it on 21, it will push the stomach and the esophagus. It'll stuff it up into the diaphragm. And once it's stuffed up far enough, you're going to feel bloated. You're going to feel spatially disoriented. You're going to get some of the contents of the stomach to squeeze back up. all hell will break loose when the psoas displaces anteriorly. Now, just cook your food a little too much and congest the gallbladder a little too much and have a stressful day. And you see how all of these factors can combine intermittently at no cycle, no regularity to the cycle. I don't understand it. Some days I get it and some days I don't. Some days yes, some days no. I don't understand. I thought it was the food preparation, but it doesn't seem to make a difference. I thought it was that deep diaphragmatic breath that somebody told me to take, but sometimes I get it and sometimes I don't, and it doesn't seem to be affected by anything. You're spinning around in circles because your perspective stinks. You have to get perspective on these problems. The symptom is a line. The symptom is a line. It is a line. And when the variables that comprise efficient digestion team up to put you on the wrong side of the line, you have the symptom. So the ratio at which these variables can combine will vary from day to day to day. One day the psoas displaces forward or backward. One day you have more or less anxiety. One day the food was right or the food was wrong. You flushed the gallbladder, you were good for 2 weeks, and then you didn't. Or the body just decides to dump sludge down the biliary tract out of nowhere. There's so much variation to each of the variables that to you, John Q. Public, it appears that there's no rhyme or reason to it, and yet there's so much rhyme or reason to it. You just have to have perspective. What perspective? That the symptom you experience is a composite of multiple concerns, and those concerns are all ebbing and flowing day to day. And when they all combine in a given moment across that line, you get your symptom. Now, you can get on straighttalk.cc and listen to this show again. You're going to need to. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I'm asking you, especially you as a new listener, to listen again. Get to that website. There's no show like this that I hear. This is like a symposium. And what I allude to, I explain in other shows. So you have a full 275 hours to sink your teeth into, and you should. You should look at this radio show like an educational institution, using radio to bring you to the website to study on your own. And it'll do that if you put it on the A-list. But if you're spinning around in symptomology, if you're spinning around with problems, and you've been everywhere, you've been to all the MDs and all the holistic practitioners, so on and so forth, I assure you the problem is you haven't been given the education you need to dig your way out of the hole you're in. And some of you are in holes for decades. So this is a note for positivity, because you do have options. You just have to roll up your sleeves and learn. And it's joyful to learn, to understand the human mechanism. Once you're on that ride, you'll be fascinated forever. And that's where your return is. So we're talking about perspectives in healing. And the perspectives have to change. So, if you're John Q. Public and you're suffering from reflux and gastritis and esophageal spasms and hiatal hernias and so on and so forth, the chemical concerns we've discussed, structurally speaking, do you take, or have you been trained, or have you made inquiry into a diaphragmatic breath? Has that happened to you yet? Have you had that shift occur? Do you know what it's like to take a deep breath and find yourself feeling relieved of tension in your body? And that's a simple thing. A deep breath, at the conclusion of which you feel relieved of the tension in your body. If that hasn't happened to you yet, then you haven't received an understanding of a diaphragmatic breath. If you have a hunchback, if you have a kyphosis, if you slouch, forward, if when you go on back bridge machines, when you lie on a pillow or a towel to take the hump out of the back, you find that challenging, that's another structural issue that combined with a tight diaphragm is enough then to stuff all those spaces in the solar plexus, stuff them deep and crush them under the weight of the ribs. By the time most people are 50, 55, 60, they start to develop that little hunch in the back. Doesn't have to be a big one. It could be a little one. Just a little hunch. Every millimeter of hunch sends the bile duct and the pancreatic duct, sends the nerve plexuses backwards as the rib cage collapses down. Women who are full-bodied, large-breasted women with the breasts sitting on the rib cage where the shoulders roll forward, starts to collapse that area backwards. And as it collapses backwards, it starts to twist. So when you're talking structure, you have to remember that the overall posture of the body is what we mean by structure. If the head's forward, the shoulders are forward. If the shoulders and head are forward, along with anterior displacement of psoas, that area in the solar plexus is going to twist. And on top of it, if the breath is not diaphragmatic, there's no way to relax those twisted organs. So if you assault your digestive process chemically, if you assault it structurally, and then you have assaulted in a way where you can't take care of the stress, they all combine, and that's why so many people have this problem. Next week, we'll do another show. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.